So today, my challenge is to present to you. So I also want to thank the team from Bering Eagle Camp to make possible my trip here. My challenge is to present to you alternatives that we're going to be seeing and having in asthma. Later in the afternoon, we're going to talk about bronchodilators, ICS, COPD, and how this pharmacotherapy is really impacting all these obstructive diseases. Does it work? So I want to start with my conflict of interest. I work with all the pharmaceutical companies who make bronchodilators. I'm a consultant with all of them. And also have an intellectual conflict of interest because I'm part of GALT and also involved with the GINA initiative. So there is an opportunity to improve asthma control. That's the challenge that we have that I want to present to you. It continues to be, and I apologize, I don't have information from Lebanon specifically, but in the United States, asthma continues to be a challenge. Even despite the fact that it's a disease that we have spent millions and millions of dollars, a lot of resources and understanding, we have a significant number of people that miss work. We have patients that go to the emergency room, and we still see an unacceptable number of patients with uncontrolled disease and mortality. With exhaled nitric oxide, with many other interventions, we are targeting and we're identifying these patients who are at poor control. And still the recommendations of treatment is a step approach of adding therapy based on patient's condition. But the truth is that even despite the fact that you treat these patients and you do everything you're supposed to be doing, there is a percentage of patients that are not fully controlled. And this is a publication by Bateman and collaborators back in 2004. Basically, these were steroid naive or low dose ICS when they entered the trial. The patient well optimized were given ICS LABAs under therapy, and they were followed for a period of 1 year. At the end, there were 20% of the patients that still have not been controlled by ACTS, by exhaled nitric oxide, or any other parameter. So there is a population that we have not achieved that control. On top of this is the fact that, you know, we don't fully understand what LABAs do in asthma. The FDA has mandated us to take the patients away from the fixed combinations LABA ICS, the asthma patients, because the safety concern that LABA may provide. My patients hate it. And there is a publication in the Annals of Internal Medicine that has demonstrated that patients are not controlled along with ICS. The patient needs a bronchodilator to help to control the symptoms. And when you're talking about people that are younger, that have activities, the fact that they are not able to go in school and do their exercise or a young individual to do their daily activities is a major problem. We're not going to be able to settle the issue about the LABAs. In my practice, I have put everybody back in LABAs because patients don't like to be away from that. And we're going to settle this issue. There is a very large study going on. There is close to 70,000 patients in mortality trial to try to understand if LABAs truly put the patients at increased risk of mortality. So the issue is what other alternatives we have. And can we consider in these alternatives anticholinergics? So if you go back, there are, and if you do a PubMed or a Google search, you go, Mr. Google is probably the best place you're going to find anything these days. You find that there are a lot of reports on ipratropium and use in asthma. As a matter of fact, it's routinely used as a rescue medication in patients who have an acute event. There was a series of publications in 2005, the Rodrigo group, that pretty much summarizes all this data that we have available in asthma and anticholinergics. And the bottom line is that there is an improvement in lung function in FEV1, there is a reduction in hospital admission, and also if you start looking at other variables, they do improve with anticholinergics. The question will be, in my practice, when the patient has been controlled, I've been using for a while TIO, and I have had TIO, tropion, long-active anticholinergic. And we surveyed a group of pulmonologists in the United States. It turned out to be like around 70%. They were already using long-active anticholinergics in patients that are having difficulty controlling asthma. The big issue is, what is the evidence that we have that it works, and is it what's going to be the process later on in approval? And so let me show you some publications. So these are initial publications in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology that shows two doses of tiotropium. All these are with the Respimat, and it shows that 5 micrograms is as good as 10 micrograms in improvement, FEV1, peak flows, improving acts and all the parameters. So they seem to be working and they seem to have a bronchodilator effect, and they treat the trough level at 8 weeks. Now what happened is, if you have a clinic, you have a patient that he is already in ICS and LABA, and do we have evidence to add in an anticholinergic to that fixed combination? Because that's the population that's going to be more interested. And furthermore, if we do have improvement in lung function, can this translate in an improvement in the reduction in exacerbations and improving in quality of life? And we do have now 4 publications, and 2 of those are in New England Journal. This is the paper by Peters and collaborator. In this study, patients were taking ICS LABA, were not well controlled, so the decision was either to increase the steroids or to add tiotropium, and just, you can appreciate the FEV1 improve more when you gave the tiotropium. Probably the pivotal trials are going to be, there are summarizes in this paper. These are 2 mirror studies, and these are the studies for registration purposes, both in Europe and in the United States. The disclaimer I have to give is that tiotropium is not approved in any country to be used on asthma. It's, as you know, it's in the registration process. In the United States, it's finishing the children programs, because if the pediatric program has to be up to 5 years in order to get approval of the medication. And when they get, they may get approval. But let me just show you some of the issues on these publications. That basically patients have been randomized to receive the 5 micrograms with the Respimat or the tiotropium and given placebo in individuals that are already taking ICS. They use at least 100 micrograms of budesonide and LABAs. So these are people that are being treated. And what I wanted to know over here is, can you have an improvement in FEV1? Can you have trough FEV1 and then time to severe exacerbation? And the studies were done taking into consideration not only improvement in lung function, but this can translate in a population that is not well controlled in reduction in exacerbations or flare-ups. It's a very large program, 117 centers in many countries, and basically they have to be under the age of 40, 5-year history asthma, never smokers, and what is more important is, what is the definition of uncontrolled asthma? And if this definition of uncontrolled asthma is what you and I treat or see in our patients. And I basically hear that despite that they are on ICS and LABAs up to 800 micrograms of budesonide, the patients have the ACQ more than 1.5, or they have persistent obstruction post-bronchodilator. And this definition actually was dictated by the FDA, that these are the patient population that they would like to see medications on impact with medications. Basically, we're seeing 60% females, 50-50 males and females. This is a primary Caucasian population, and that may be a problem later on. And there are studies going on with African Americans, understanding that there is a different response to some medications in some populations. In the United States, the studies in Hispanics have been very complicated, especially the genetic studies, because the Hispanic population is very heterogeneous. the Hispanic population of the East and the South is two generations related to Europeans. The Hispanic population of the West, of the Southwest, is more related to Mexicans, it's more related to Indian Americans, and it's more related to Chinese. So that creates the spectrum of genetics very complicated. Overall, in these programs, the patients FEV1s were in the range of around 70%, and the patients have significant bronchodilator response. I just want to point out the fact that the patient's disposition, very small number that discontinue premature, and this is an important issue, especially if you have a population that is unstable asthma or poor control. And out of those patients who withdraw, only 1% was due to their asthma symptoms. So let's go over the primary endpoints, and we can see, I'm just going to show you one of the two studies. Both studies are identical, the response, although I'm going to show you later on that the ACQ and the quality of life assessments turn out to be different. One study was very good, the other study, it was not that good. But in overall, in lung function, there is a significant improvement in trough FEV1, and there is sustained compared with placebo on top of the ICS and the LAVAS. If you look at the peak FEV, 0 to 3 hours, is also very significant elevated. If we look at asthma exacerbations, now for this program, asthma exacerbations, first is the time to the first exacerbation, and is initiation or doubling of systemic steroid therapy for at least 3 days. That's the definition that was used. And if you add in this group, there is actually a reduction in exacerbation in the tiotropium group compared with the placebo. Now, and this is truth for the number that need to treat. It's actually 15 patients to reduce one exacerbation, and it's true to first exacerbation and total number of exacerbations. Some of the secondary endpoints will be the FEV1 response of the 24-hour profile. This pretty much, this is your circadian rhythm, what we see in lung function, and adding on top of the ICS LAVA, you still have a significant improvement, as well as you look at the weekly peak expiratory flow, and this is the tiotropium groups in both studies, they're all significant increase, and that's pretty consistent. With the ACQ, actually, it turned out to be very interesting, because one of the trials you can see here doesn't seem to be much difference at the beginning, and the separation occurs later on during the therapy. All these are a 48-week study, almost a one-year study. While in the study number 2 that is here on your right, there is a significant separation that occurs immediately in the patient's populations. The same if you look at the asthma quality of life questionnaire, the AQLQ, you see the same effects. In one study, it doesn't seem to be different, but in this other study, there is a significant difference. At the end of the day, this may not be relevant for the approval process, but this has to be, we have to understand why there is such a big diversity between the two studies, and it's going to have to go back, look at patient populations, and start doing it all over again. The FDA will not give an indication on quality of life parameters. What also is important to understand is, well, we're treating them. We're treating them with ICS LABA. The rescue should be systemic steroids to try to hold them. So are we exposing a population at risk to having adverse events or having problems? Are we having more episodes of asthma worsening? And as a matter of fact, you can appreciate here in the tiotropium group, there is a 31% reduction, and it's a highly statistically significant reduction of this worsening of the condition. So it seems to be very effective. Now you can analyze, look at the papers, and if you look at both of the New England Journal publications online, there is all the group of interest, so you can separate. I just put one. This is the separation by the different characteristics of FEV1. You can separate by allergy history. You can separate by the use of concomitant medication and the IgE. And it's identical. There is the same response and they all favor the use of adding tiotropium. Safety is certainly a big concern, and it has to be addressed. This is tiotropium given to the Respimat. In COPD, I think we have settled with the TioSphere study, there is no increased risk of cardiac events in this COPD population. What do we know in asthmatic populations? What do we know with these trials? As you can appreciate, total numbers of adverse events, severe adverse events, withdrawal due to discontinuation due to adverse events were identical between both groups. As a matter of fact, if you look at the pool analysis of all the studies, there is no difference between groups. And this is just a list of the most common problems that you will see. And in the placebo, you have more of the asthmatic exacerbation due to the fact that these patients had more flare-ups and actually had more exacerbations of asthma. All the other side effects were identical. So what can we say? So if you have a patient with unstable asthma that already been controlled with ICS and LABA, all these programs and this process are showing us that adding tiotropium, you have an improvement in lung function, you reduce exacerbations, and there is some improvement, some patient-related outcomes, although I think this is something we'll have to better understand. And so far, the safety profile seems to be fine. So the clinical implications are going to be that it's going to be an alternative on therapy. Certainly, if we now would be studying added to ICS LABA, we're going to have to study later on what about using ICS-LAMA as a combination in the, for the maintenance and for the rescue in these patients. And we're going to have to settle, you know, what is the issues about LABA and safety in patients with asthma. As I said before, patients don't like to be on ICS alone. They don't feel that their symptoms have been taken care, but at the same time, if we have a risk of having any problem with LABAs, we just have to be careful and we have to monitor them closely. I want to remind you that asthma pharmacotherapy is one of the elements of their therapy. And I want to emphasize the fact that, we need to continue measure and monitor the patients, that we need to work with the patient education and the control of the environmental factors, the fact that it's still much lower amount, but still people dying on asthma today is completely unacceptable. The use of the peak flows and objective ways to communicate, in my practice, I have found to be the most useful tool, especially the fact the individual who has asthma goes to the emergency room. Normally, their peak flow can do 200-300. Today, they are doing 80. They already took the rescue short-acting bronchodilators, and still they are doing 60-80. When they arrive to the emergency room, when they arrive to your office, you have an objective way to communicate. It's so hard to assess the fact that if they are worse or not in their symptoms. And I also emphasize to our asthmatic patients that they would tell you, oh, you know, I know where I'm bad. I know where I need to see you. There is a paper in New England Journal back in 1979 that they measure the ability of the asthmatic patients to sense dyspnea. They can. They have lost the receptors in their airway. If they put a clip in their nose and they put a clip in their nose to you and make you breathe against a resistor, like a syringe, the different needle size, when you get around 25, 27, you say, I cannot breathe with this. It's very hard for me to breathe through this little hole. The asthmatic patients keep going because they have lost the sense of the obstruction in their airway. That's what is very important to emphasize today. To them, the use of the peak flow meter as a way. I tell them, you don't have to use a peak flow every day. I don't care what you do every day. I mean, who cares? I only care when you don't feel fine. And when that big flow has gone down and you have taken your rescue medication. And it's certainly always try to find in the environment if there is anything that I could change, anything that I could do, why their symptoms are worse in some particular areas of their life. And this requires a very close interview and evaluation to try to assess why this is happening. This is a disease that is not going to go away. This is a disease that is here to stay. Are we going to see two large trends in the developments in pharmacotherapy? Certainly, having antibodies against particular interleukins are going to be a very big. There are two or three other compounds in the process to be approved by the different regulatory organisms. Those are a very small niche, a very small number of patients. The overall population has to be controlled with ICS/LABAs, anti-leukotriene antagonists, as well as bronchodilators, and the use of LAMAs may give us an alternative. I want to thank again the invitation to be at this event, as well as the organizing committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Azevedo, for this very stimulating lecture indeed about mostly the role of LAMAs in controlling the gap in asthma control, and the floor is open to questions.